Shalom, and thank you for listening at BethEmmanuel.org. Beth Emmanuel relies on the generosity of our listeners to advance this vital gospel message about the coming kingdom. Please consider a donation to Beth Emmanuel, where Messianic Judaism is more than an idea. It's really happening.
These are the sons of Ishmael, and these are their names, by their villages and by their camps, 12 princes, according to their tribes. These are the years of the life of Ishmael, 137 years, and he breathed his last and died, and was gathered to his people. They settled from Havilah to Shur, which is east of Egypt, as one goes toward Assyria. He settled in defiance of all his relatives. Genesis 25:16-18. An Iranian Muslim by the name of Amin tells the story of when Yeshua appeared to him in a dream. He had become disillusioned with praying the daily prayers in Arabic, a language that, as a Persian speaking Iranian, he did not understand. He cried out to Allah and resolved that he was no longer going to pray unless God reveal himself. That night, he had a dream of Yeshua. He did not know anything about Yeshua, except that he is a prophet and that he taught about love. Bibles are not sold in the theocracy of Iran. You can't go to a bookstore and buy a copy of the Bible. It's a forbidden book. Most Iranians know very little about our master, only what they read about him in the Quran. And what does the Quran say? That Isa al-Masih, Yeshua, the Messiah, is a great prophet. He was born of the Virgin Maryam. He performed miracles. He taught love. He taught Israel the Torah. And these are just the bones of the story, and not even the truth about his death and resurrection. The Quran says he did not die on a cross, but only appeared to do so before he ascended to heaven. Although he is honored as a prophet, his words are not taught or studied, and the gospel is a closed book. Islam teaches that both the Tanakh and the gospel have been corrupted by the Jews. In the dream, Amin saw his mother, Maryam, and his sister, Alham. He and Alham were standing behind their mother. The master appeared to them. He held in his hands two white pieces of paper. Yeshua said to Amin's mother, "Maryam, I am Isa al-Masih. Take these two pieces of paper and pass them to Amin and Alham." His mother received the papers and passed them to her children. Then she turned back to face Yeshua again, but the dream ended, and the man awoke. It was 5 a.m. He wondered, who is the prophet Isa really? And what were those two white papers? As he was thinking about this, he heard the sound of weeping from another bedroom in the house, from the room where his mother and his sister slept. He ran in to check on them, and he said, "What's wrong with you?" And they said, "We had a dream from Isa." Both women dreamed the same dream, and it was the same dream Amin saw. Then they were all crying and praying, "Allah, what do you want to show us?" 5 hours later, at 10 a.m., they heard a knock at the door. They opened the door. A friend stepped inside. He carried a book. He laid a Farsi Persian Bible on the table. He said, "I am sent by God to share this word with you. I'd like to tell you that Isa al-Masih is not only a prophet. Isa al-Masih is the word of God." And he began to share the gospel. Amin's mother stopped him and said, "Why are you telling this now? We have known you for 5 years. He said, "I had to tell you today, because earlier that same morning at 5 a.m., the master spoke to him in a dream and said, 'Son, get up, take my word to Amin's house. They are ready to hear my word today.'" This is one example from a vast sea of stories told by new believers from Muslim backgrounds. In my last teaching, I introduced you to this strange and unanticipated phenomenon, which has now been occurring with some degree of regularity among Muslims for 30 years. Somewhere around 1 in 4 of new Muslim believers report that Yeshua appeared to them in dreams, visions, or other encounters, and beckoned them to follow after him. By 2012, stories like this have become so ubiquitous and common that Christian writer and missionary Tom Doyle was able to compile a collection into a book he titled Dreams and Visions, Is Jesus Awakening the Muslim World? A week ago, I heard secondhand that a Christian missionary organization to Egypt finds new believers by posting on social media an advertisement that says, "Have you seen the man in white?" These are subjective stories, mere anecdotes, and it's impossible to verify them or take any single one of them as evidence or valid testimony. They would not stand up in a court of law, but when taken together, as a pattern, a consistent picture emerges. Of course, it's possible one or two people here or there might fabricate such a story, make things up, or have some sort of religious delusion, but it's not likely that a global phenomenon can be explained away as delusion or fabrication. In the previous teaching, I explained that in the 1400 years since Muhammad lived and taught, only small handfuls of Muslims have converted to Christianity, whereas millions of Christians have converted to Islam, or been converted to Islam. Muslims have proven themselves more resistant to the persuasion of the gospel message than even the Jewish people. However, beginning in the 1980s, we began to see a move of God from within Islam that seems to continue to grow, fueled in part by the personal appearances of the angel of Yeshua. From within the Muslim people, seekers of Yeshua are stepping forward, and Iran is a good example. Iran is a theocracy controlled by Ayatollahs. They want to see Israel destroyed, the West fall, and Islam conquer the world. Iran is a closed country. It currently leads the worldwide war against Israel and the Jewish people. Iran is the real power behind Hamas, behind Hezbollah, behind the Houthis, behind the Free Palestine movement. They hold court at the United Nations and, in defiance of international agreements, pursue nuclear weapons production. They have twice, in the last several months, rained down cruise missiles, ballistic missiles, and explosive drones on Israel. They fund terrorism around the world. Something is happening in Iran. Christianity Today reports that, according to research conducted in 2020 by Gaman, a secular Netherlands-based research group, 1.5% of Iranians now identify as Christian. That puts the number of Iranian Christians, former Muslims, at nearly 1 million. That may not sound like much, but when measured against the meager success of the gospel over the last 1,400 years, it warrants astonishment. That is something to celebrate. In Doyle's book, he tells the story of a gifted Iranian protege named Ali studying in Qom, Iran. According to Doyle, at any given time in Qom, some 50,000 seminarians study in its schools, heightening its worldwide influence. Pakistan alone has 6,000 students in Qom. There are even study programs for women who want to deepen their understanding of the Muslim faith. Virtually every high-ranking religious leader in Shia Islam has studied in Qom. Ali went to Qom on scholarships because he was such a gifted student. He excelled quickly in his studies. He advanced ahead of his peers. He was expected to become a powerful teacher among Sunnis for Shia Islam. Then, the dreams began. He saw the prophet Isa in a dream. But aside from the sparse statements in the Quran, he had no primary text to study the words of Isa. The dream recurred some 12 times before Ali finally made a trip to Tehran. where he hoped he could acquire a Bible from an Armenian Christian he knew so that he could read the Injil, the Gospel. The Armenian gifted him the Bible, which he smuggled back to Qom. He returned to his studies. At night, the master appeared to him in his dreams and personally taught him. In the morning, he would open the Bible and read the words of Yeshua and discover the same teachings he had heard in his dream. According to research about Muslim background believers, nothing is more influential in persuading Muslims to become followers of Yeshua than the power of his words in the Gospels, particularly the Sermon on the Mount. The teachings of Yeshua upend Arab and Islamic honor culture and that strict eye-for-eye vendetta violence. Yeshua's teachings about loving your neighbor and loving your enemy go straight to the heart. Nothing is more powerful in changing hearts than our master's own teachings and words. Ali continued to have regular dreams about the prophet Isa. His roommate in Qom often heard him calling out the name of Isa in the night, and Ali told him he was suffering nightmares, but they were not nightmares. After completing his work in the seminary, Ali relocated to Syria, where he was known as Imam Sheikh Ali. Not long after taking his new post, he sought out a known Muslim believer and confessed to him that he had been in conversation with Yeshua through these recurring dreams. He declared, "The Bible is the truth. The Quran is a book of fairy tales." One thing still troubled him and made him feel reluctant: the Christian doctrine of Trinity. Apparently, Yeshua did not explain the Trinity to Ali during the course of their private tutoring sessions. And in Messianic Judaism, this objection is familiar territory. The Trinitarian language of the creeds is one of the main obstacles to the Jewish people as well. Despite what the church fathers at the Council of Nicaea actually meant by the doctrine of the Trinity, Jewish people and Muslims both see it as a type of polytheism, a violation of monotheism, and a violation of the belief in the one God of the Bible. That's not what the Trinity doctrine means. And that was not the intention behind the formation of the creeds. Just the opposite, actually. But that is how it sounds to the outside world. So the doctrine of the Trinity is a real problem for any Muslim who would otherwise consider Yeshua. Likewise, both Islam and Judaism object to the idea of God fathering a son through a human woman. We know that's not how the virgin birth is presented in the Gospels, but that's generally how it's misrepresented. I have found in my own conversations with people that many people believe that Jesus is called the Son of God because God fathered him through Mary. We have worked through these problems and many similar objections here at Beth Emmanuel. Our post-missionary expression of an Orthodox form of Messianic Judaism has forced us to confront these hard questions and reconcile them with Judaism, and we have done so. We have done so for many other issues as well, similar stumbling blocks, such as the idea of the cancellation of the Torah. Many of the objections to Yeshua raised by Jewish anti-missionaries are the exact same objections that Muslims have toward the gospel. We have answers to those questions, not contrived or forced answers based on affirmations of dogmas, but real answers. We have worked through the anti-missionary objections, such as our teaching's 26 reasons Jews don't believe in Jesus. Because of the work we have done over the years in learning to understand Yeshua and the entire New Testament from its original Jewish perspective, we are probably better equipped to help Muslims overcome such obstacles, better equipped than most Christian missionary organizations would be. Except for one issue: God's covenant with Israel, the Jewish people. My friend John is a missionary to Muslims in Cairo. He says that when he disciples new Muslim background believers, he teaches them that as members of the nations who follow Messiah, they should be supporting the Jewish people In keeping with Paul's teaching, if the nations have shared in their spiritual things, they are indebted to serve also in the material things. That is, if the nations have shared in Israel's spiritual things, they are indebted to serve the Jewish people also in the material things. Romans 15:27. John encourages Muslim background believers to financially support Messianic Jewish workers in Israel. He says that other missionaries to Muslims have responded to this suggestion by saying, "Impossible, more than impossible." Our Master Yeshua says, "This good news about the kingdom will be proclaimed in the whole world as a testimony to all the nations, and then the end will come." Matthew 24:14. Last week, I had a conversation with another missionary friend, formerly with Frontier Alliance International. She explained that in the history of Christian missions to carry the gospel to the world, missionaries from Western nations focused primarily on the coastlands through the 1700s and 1800s. In the 1900s, the focus shifted to inland missions, like the work of Hudson Taylor's China Inland Mission. In the late 20th century, the focus shifted to the final frontier of the gospel message, what is called the 1040 window. The 1040 window describes a specific geographic region of the world located between 10 degrees and 40 degrees north latitude, spanning across parts of North Africa, the Middle East, and Asia. It includes countries such as Morocco, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, India, China, and Japan, dominated by Islam, Hinduism, and Buddhism. This last push into the final frontiers of the mission field focuses on the Great Commission. Go, therefore, and make disciples of all nations, immersing them, teaching them to observe all that I commanded you. The frontier missions movement focused on Islam in the effort to complete that commission. But Yeshua also warns us about those who travel around on sea and land to make one proselyte, and when he becomes one, you make him twice as much a son of hell as yourselves. Matthew 23:15. Unfortunately, most Christian missionaries to Muslims unwittingly carry along with them replacement theology and latent Christian anti-Semitism. This can be compared to early European missions to indigenous peoples of the Americas, unaware that, in addition to the gospel, they carried along with them smallpox, measles, influenza, and typhus, diseases for which those populations had no natural immunities. The children of Ishmael harbor hatred and enmity for the Jewish people at large, and especially for the state of Israel. They have no natural immunity to anti-Semitism or replacement theology. Christians from the Arab and Muslim world too often find traditional Christian anti-Semitism fits comfortably on their hands like a pair of old gloves. For that reason, I only support missionaries to Islam that also have their heads screwed on straight regarding the Jewish people, the Torah, God's covenant with Israel, and, if possible, Zionism and the modern state of Israel. I am aware of only a few. Frontier Alliance International, which has workers doing humanitarian projects primarily in the Middle East, in Israel, Syria, Lebanon, Turkey, Iraq, Iran. A missionary family that holds together a small community in the West Bank that we support through Beth Emmanuel. I can't say the name for their own safety. And also my friend John, I can't say his real name for his own safety, who teaches in Egypt. These are the types of missionaries that you support, by the way, when you donate to Beth Emmanuel, because we redirect 10% of your donations to the work of other missions and ministries, including these missions. My missionary friend, who went to work for Frontier Alliance International, said that she went to work for FAI primarily because of their Israel-centric viewpoint. She said she was inspired by the passage in Romans 11 where Paul says that he spreads the good news to the nations in hope that he might somehow move to jealousy my fellow countrymen and save some of them. Romans 11:14. She said, "What could move Israel to jealousy more than their former enemies turning to them in love and affirming the covenant that comes through Isaac. Ishmael despised Isaac's inheritance rights. He taunted Isaac, and Sarah said, "The son of this maid shall not be an heir with my son Isaac." And the Lord said, "Whatever Sarah tells you, listen to her, for through Isaac your descendants shall be named." But the Lord also said to Abraham, "The son of the maid I will make a nation also, because he is your descendant." That great nation has grown to 24% of the world's population, today boasting nearly 2 billion Muslims. Islam is still the fastest growing religion in the world, and it is projected to eclipse Christianity by 2050. Compare that 2 billion with the world's 15 million Jews, half of which live in the state of Israel. And consider the resolve of those 2 billion Muslims to destroy those 15 million Jews at a ratio of 134-1. Islam also believes in an end of days scenario, a war of Gog and Magog, a coming apocalyptic day of judgment, and a universal kingdom under a united caliphate. But in Islam's version of the eschatology, the end of days must commence with a war against the infidels, especially the Jewish people. This is the spiritual animus behind the Islamic and Arab terrorism. Everyone knows that the name of the God of Islam is Allah. But it may come as a surprise to you to realize that this is not a different God. It's merely the Arabic word for God, corresponding to El or Elohim. Allah is the same as the God of the Bible, but Islam has grossly distorted the depiction of God to the point of making him into another God, a God unrecognizable from the Bible. Nevertheless, it's God we are talking about, the God of Abraham, the God of Judaism, the God of Christianity. Messianic Jewish pioneer and luminary Rabbi Yechiel Tzvi Lichtenstein HaChassid, the Evan Zohar, discourses at length on this subject in his book Limudei HaNevi'im, The Teachings of the Prophets. In this book, he points out that Christianity and Islam are both apostate daughters of Judaism, and both have strayed from the biblical truth. He shows how both have also misunderstood their own scriptures and sacred writings. He reconciles both under the Torah and the covenant that God made with Abraham. It's an amazing piece of literature written more than 100 years ago, yet too progressive even for our modern times. Along similar lines, many missionaries to Muslim people have adopted a new strategy. Rather than trying to separate new believers from Islam, they encourage them to remain within the mosque and within the Muslim community, but direct their allegiance to Yeshua and to his message as Muslims, rather than to the Prophet Muhammad. This approach works well in the Muslim world because Islam considers both the Tanakh and the Gospels as sacred text, and it honors Yeshua as a prophet. This strategy allows new Muslim believers to remain incognito, sparing their lives. They would otherwise be persecuted and too often killed as apostates. So it has several advantages. But it also has some obvious disadvantages, especially if a Muslim believer hopes to raise children who will also be disciples of Yeshua. Instead, I think a better solution would be a type of third rail, similar to our post-missionary Orthodox expression of Messianic Judaism. Neither Christian nor Muslim, but something in between. One could speak of a Messianic Islam, which rejects the distortions of Muhammad and the Quran while elevating Yeshua and the Gospel, but does not attempt to integrate Muslims into the church theologically or culturally. You need not take away the minaret or the call to prayer. Messianic Islam could function in relation to Islam, much the same way Messianic Judaism functions in relationship to Judaism. This would be like when the angel of Hashem says to Hagar, "Do not fear, for God has heard the voice of the lad where he is." But to arrive at that point, the Muslim believer needs to reconcile with the Jewish Jesus and the Jewish people. That seems impossible, more than impossible. But I wonder if that's what Yeshua is doing as he appears to Muslims through dreams, visions, and visitations. Is it a coincidence that, among the revolutionary youth of Iran, there is a growing love and admiration for Israel? What if Yeshua is preparing witnesses in Iran to go forth to the Muslim world in his name, bearing testimony to the Jewish Yeshua and God's covenant with Israel? What if Iranian believers became a major force for turning the Middle East away from anti-Jewish hatred? Would that, perhaps, provoke Israel to jealousy? Should we be translating Torah Club to Farsi? It is Ishmael's destiny to be a great nation. Not just a large nation, but a great nation. Despite all the wealth and power of the Muslim and Arab world, that world can hardly be said to be a great nation. The Arab world suffers, instead, under an unrelenting curse that seems to continually devastate them from within, nation against nation, tribe against tribe, brother against brother. If the Arab people was once a proud and noble people, if Islam was once famous for producing mathematicians and philosophers, they are now famous for producing terrorism, murder, fratricide, corruption, Holocaust, and grinding third world standards. All this while Ishmael looks jealously upon the success of the Jewish people in Israel, and he curses and taunts Israel, not realizing that those who curse them will be cursed, and those who bless them will be blessed. Ishmael will become a great nation and worthy sons of Abraham only when those curses turn to blessing, when they renounce their hatred for Israel and learn to bless the children of Isaac, reversing the taunt of their father Ishmael. Then they will receive the full blessing of Abraham their father. "I will bless those who bless you." That is Ishmael's destiny. Why are we taking time to talk about Muslims' dreams and visions and missions to Muslims? First, I want you to be encouraged in your faith. These stories of Muslims encountering our Master Yeshua, the Malak Yeshua, whether in dreams, visions, or visitations, are encouraging to me. They remind me that our faith is real and that our confidence in Yeshua is not misplaced. They give me hope. They remind me that God is bigger than all of my limitations, and our Master Yeshua is still at work in the world, and I want you to share that joy. Second, I want you to be encouraged in your participation at Beth Emmanuel and in Messianic Judaism. Yeshua has entrusted us with the keys to the kingdom, the Jewish teaching of Yeshua and the apostles. The theological work and the learning that we are doing is important. Even if we are tucked away here in remote Hudson, Wisconsin, the things that we are learning and engaging with are at the center of world events today, at the intersection of the world's great religions, at the focal point of the world's populations and the human story. Moreover, Yeshua has given us keys to unlock the doors that shut the gospel out from the Muslim world. And we should be praying about this. How can we contribute to the effort? How can we help turn those locks? Finally, in view of these things, I want to ask you to begin to pray regularly for the Muslim people, particularly the people of Iran, but for all the spiritual and physical children of Ishmael, even if they are our enemies, especially if they are our enemies. These are Abraham's children too, to whom God made promises when he appeared to Hagar in the wilderness. May God hear the voice of the child weeping and may God open the eyes of Hagar to behold the well of living water that is before her.
Take on my yoke and learn from me and find rest for your soul.